Former San Francisco 49er linebacker Chris Borland joins us, and you probably know the story, but if you don't, at the age of 24 in a very successful rookie season in the NFL, he announced his retirement from pro football because of his concerns over concussion and head injuries. In explaining that decision, he said, "From what I've researched and what I've experienced, I don't think it's worth the risk." And, of course, Chris now works with Gridiron Greats, a nonprofit organization that assists former NFL players who are in need due to brain injury and chronic pain. He also does advocacy work for the Concussion Legacy Foundation, focusing on the issue of children waiting until at least junior high school before playing tackle football. Chris, we'll talk about your decision to retire after your first very successful season in the NFL. But first, let's go back to growing up in Ohio and playing football as a kid. How did you view football at that time?
Well, first off, thanks for having me, Ron. It's a pleasure to be on. Yeah, growing up in Southwest Ohio, football is like a religion. My dad played in college. It was the biggest show in town was the high school rivalry between the small Catholic high school and then the public school in town. And, you know, every Saturday was consumed by watching college football. Every Sunday was consumed by watching pro football. And I'm one of seven kids in my family, six boys. So I have four older brothers and an older sister that I was trying to keep up with my entire childhood. So tons of backyard games. Began playing organized football in high school, and after about 5 minutes of getting adjusted to wearing pads for the first time, I knew it was what I wanted to do. Just immersed in it, a huge Green Bay Packers fan, Wisconsin and Notre Dame college fan, and it meant everything to me growing up.
When you think about the concussion issue from a family standpoint, from you as an individual playing the game, what understanding did you have about concussions?
Well, I think when I started, my freshman year of high school was 2005. But it wasn't really high in the public consciousness like it is today. Really, the 11 years of organized football I played really spanned a time where we learned a lot. And so I went from in ninth grade being completely naive to hearing more about it. Obviously, there were some high-profile cases of men who'd taken their life or publicly shared their struggles. Despite that, I just was so singularly focused on football that while I would read those or see those stories, would just go back to focusing on being a player, particularly in college. It's kind of all-consuming. So my thinking on it evolved, but not until late. I think it would have been early in high school or college, or early on in college, to really understand what was going on. There weren't a tremendous amount of cases. The research wasn't made available to many players. So learned a lot really throughout my rookie year.
Yeah, you had two diagnosed concussions, both before college. But you say that you sustained 13 suspected concussions that you did not report throughout your football career. What was your aha moment?
Well, there was no single aha moment. I think I was concussed prior to camp, and I wouldn't call that an aha moment. I just think it was after that I began to look into the research, and it was at first subtle. I just was curious, having heard some of these extreme cases, kind of what the middle road was. You know, I know there's guys in the past who've had significant pathology, but also maybe took performance-enhancing drugs or abused prescription medication. And I wanted a clearer picture of what I was getting myself into. And so maybe that preseason concussion in San Francisco was an aha moment. But in my thinking, it really just gathered steam. I learned more and went from being skeptical of a lot of the research to, after familiarizing myself with more and more, realized that I think this disease of CTE is very real. I think there's a myriad of other issues that players subject themselves to. And having already had a concussion history between the two diagnosed and the 13 or so of a similar severity, you know, wasn't entirely proactive. I'm not overtly symptomatic on a daily basis, but, you know, it's something that there's players who've hit their head far less than I have, who've had significant pathology upon autopsy. And so for me, it was the right decision. I always refrain from making blanket statements because I think everybody's case is unique. But for me, it made sense.
What were the symptoms early on when you had concussions that maybe were a little bit confusing to you? You know, maybe if you hadn't had them before, or maybe there was one that was particularly bad early on in your football career that all of a sudden it did open your eyes. What were the symptoms you had to live with?
Well, my first diagnosed concussion was a significant one. I was knocked unconscious for over a minute. I went to the hospital with a contusion on my brain. So that was, there was not a whole lot of ambiguity about the symptoms. I mean, I was nauseous, very dizzy, unconscious for over a minute. And so that was starkly obvious. I think where it gets more difficult to define, and I certainly experienced my fair share of these throughout the decade or so I played organized football, was when you'd see stars, or when you'd have to be slightly off balance, or have a little bit of ringing in your ears. And when I was young, I was under the impression that a concussion was if you were knocked out, or if you were vomiting from being concussed, and everything less than that wasn't a concussion. But the reality is each time we would get dinged, is what we would call it. Those are concussions, and so. With that in mind, it's hard to count how many you have at middle linebacker in the Big Ten, or going both ways at a small Catholic high school, certainly playing in the NFL. So it's hard to articulate at times, and I think that's part of the challenge for players, particularly young kids. The symptoms may be subtle. I don't know how an eight-year-old describes slight disequilibrium in their gait. They don't really have the words to articulate that, and so that's one of the things that's tricky about advocating for this issue.
You know, it's very interesting, Chris, because I think maybe your biggest battle was the fact that you knew going in that you could get hurt. You knew you could probably get a concussion, and yet you made the commitment to football. And I'm wondering about the emotional challenges you had to go through, pro and con, on something like this, because you become part of a family, part of a team. You don't want to let any of those down, that type of discussion internally with yourself. How hard was that discussion with yourself?
Well, every player understands on a certain level that football is dangerous, but when I began to quantify it, I realized that my goals within the game, individually and as a teammate, didn't jive with my personal health goals or the life I wanted to live. And so you're exactly right. That's when it became excruciating. Towards the end of the year, when I realized I didn't want to pursue a decade-plus-long career like I hoped for going into the NFL, and then shortly after the season, as I realized and ultimately decided I would play one season, the hardest part about that was that I felt like I was quitting on my teammates. And that really hurt. And I'd never, I wanted to be there for the team. I always prided myself on being a team player. Was a two-time captain at Wisconsin, voted unanimously by the seniors as a junior to be captain. And that always meant a lot to me. So I would say that was the hardest part about my decision. It was leaving the guys in the locker room, leaving the fans who had supported me and the ownership and coaching staff. But, ultimately you have to do what's right for your personal health. And, Most of the people understood. Most of my teammates and friends and family got it. And those who didn't, I understand. I probably do deserve some criticism. I could have researched this more myself earlier on, but was so committed to football that I didn't look into it earlier. And had I, maybe I wouldn't have played.
We only have 45 seconds left before we have to break here. And as a pilot, I learned early on that the first decision you make when you're flying is always your best decision, meaning you don't get yourself into a yo-yo situation. Did you have to deal with this when you said, hey, I don't want to play this game any longer? Did you ever second guess it?
No, not after the fact. It was the hardest decision I've ever made, and I you know, really knew what I was going to do, but waited a month just because it was so hard to pull that proverbial trigger. But since I made the decision, I haven't looked back for a moment. I had a great experience in football, made lifelong friends, and I've been involved in some really incredible work since. So I'm a lucky man.
Chris Borland is with us, and when we come back after the break, we're going to talk about another aspect of what he's doing, the Concussion Legacy Foundation, focusing on the issue of children waiting to at least junior high before playing tackle football. We continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on Sports Byline. Chris Borland is with us on Sports Byline USA. In his rookie season with the San Francisco 49ers, he stepped in, and boy, he was an outstanding player from the very beginning. He had two games in which he had 18 tackles in one game and 17 tackles in the other. He was named the defensive player of the week, but he did after his first year decided at the age of 24 to retire, and now he's working in some other areas that have to deal with the issues that affect football players present and past as well. But as I alluded to before the break, that you're working with the Concussion Legacy Foundation. Tell everybody what that is.
Well, the Concussion Legacy Foundation is an advocacy group that works in conjunction with Boston University and the VA. And so if you've read about CTE and you understand the players' autopsies, a lot of that is done there at the Boston University VA Brain Bank. So the Concussion Legacy Foundation recruits players and others to donate their brains to science. We also do a lot of work advocating for creating a healthier environment for active athletes. So from everyone from 5 years old through the NFL, and then also in every other sport. It's not just football that has a concussion problem or a brain injury problem. So they really do it all. They've really changed the landscape and are really helping people make informed decisions and helping sports be safer for participants. And without, you know, with the goal in mind that everybody loves sports and wants to be active and healthy, this is just a way of making it better.
You know, Chris, this has been a subject that I've been very active on the air. I mean, I've been sitting in this seat for some 30 years, and there are things that I don't like about sports, and I talk about it. And certainly this is the area with kids playing combative contact type of sports. Let's just keep it to football. And what bothers me is that, and I saw your quote here, you said, "I'm somewhat incredulous that we even discuss the reasonability of hitting a five-year-old in the head hundreds of times. It baffles me. I think you can wait to play." And I don't understand that as well, because first of all, you have parents who should have the responsibility of protecting their children. And if you throw them out there with their brains developing, and they get hurt, you don't know as a parent, not being a doctor, that you're doing the right thing and everything. And I don't understand it. Maybe you can help me understand. Is it a cultural thing that we've been playing football and playing conflict sports for such a long time that it's just ingrained in us and it's automatically accepted that it's the right thing to do?
I think that's certainly part of it. I come from a place in Southwest Ohio where football is a religion. I have many teammates and friends from South Florida and Texas and California who grew up in a similar way. What's another component as to why we're playing with football with children that are so young is that it's a marketplace. There's I think over 3 million kids under 18 playing football. Pop Warner was never intended for children as young as five. It was intended for junior high schoolers to get ready for high school. And I think helmet manufacturers, sporting good manufacturers, the NFL and others saw an opportunity. The younger you went to have more kids buying football equipment and then becoming fans of the NFL. And so that's one explanation. I do think we're seeing a shift that I'm optimistic about to retooling youth football into a flag-only game. If I can take off my advocate hat for a second and put on my football helmet, I started in ninth grade. There's many Hall of Famers who started in high school or later. The silver lining of this issue is that not only is it best for your health, but it may be better for you athletically. And that's something that I try to frame it that way, because people in these football hotbeds of Southwest Ohio, Texas, California, Florida are more receptive to that, because it is that football has such a stronghold culturally. I think maybe a more optimistic framing is that it makes you a better athlete to run more, to, you know, work on your eye-hand coordination and footwork. And, you know, it's a shame to me that bigger children are relegated to the offensive line when they're that young, because they aren't afforded the opportunity to get into good shape.
I know in an article that I read, you said there was a poll found 48% of Americans would encourage a child who wanted to play football to participate in another sport due to concerns about concussions. I think that is also a promising sign, too.
Yeah, and it's the consciousness in 2018 is a lot higher than it was when I started playing football in 2005, and that's a great sign. And I think however it manifests, I do think we are gaining a better understanding of the consequences. Would hate to see the game go away, but I just think we're at this inflection point where we need to make some serious changes. And to me, it makes the most sense to start with the most vulnerable and young kids.
You know, in the article that I read here in San Francisco, it was about the future of professional football, and your quote was, "Any specific number with concussions presented as data is at best horribly inaccurate." How much do you think it's inaccurate by?
There's estimates that only 1 in 8 to 1 in 20 diagnosed or concussions are reported. So really a minuscule fraction of whatever data you'd be looking at. And so the NFL will regularly say there's been X amount of concussions. The Department of Defense and NCAA are doing a big study together where they're trying to collect all of the concussions that are experienced in college football at the member institutions for their collaboration. And I actually participated in that study while I was at Wisconsin. And so their research suggests I didn't have any concussions. In reality, if you went down the list of symptoms of what a concussion is, hard to put a number on, but many. And so that's the reality of an unseen injury, and players are disincentivized to report, to keep their spot on the team, to keep their job, to support their family. So I do think it's disingenuous when a league or the NCAA says there's been this many concussions. I know from playing that there's always more.
Tim Green is a good friend of mine, and recently on 60 Minutes, they just did a piece about him. He has ALS now, and I've known him for a very long time, and to just think about him now going through this, Dwight Clark was a good friend of mine. I've had others, and I know it has to do with football. I mean, it just can't be something that just pops up or it's in their family background or something. What advice do you have either for a football player at any level of competition when it comes to these issues?
It's really, I try to refrain from telling people what to do, but I would encourage anybody considering playing or not playing to really dive into the research. And it's all available. I mean, Google Scholar is a very simple resource where you can find any and all papers you'd like to read about brain injury in football. And that was basically how my journey into this started. And so I have friends that are active players in the NFL and a few still in college, friends that coach. And, you know, I think leaving or deciding not to play isn't an affront to their decision, but just a different different philosophy. And so I'm understanding of those that choose to play and supportive of their choice, but it must be informed. And the leagues and the NCAA and aren't doing as good of a job as they could. And so, unfortunately, players have to kind of take it on their own to get informed.
We have a little bit over a minute left. You say the focus on concussion-producing hits ignores subconcussive collisions. Tell everybody what that is.
Well, subconcussive hits are just the routine hits that you experience every play as a lineman or running back or linebacker. And you may not have symptoms, so you may not be dizzy or have ringing in your ears or certainly not knocked out or anything like that. That doesn't mean your brain didn't experience an injury. And the research is suggesting that CTE and other diseases are likely caused by the repetitive nature of those subconcussive hits. So a lot of the industry focus has been on examining concussions and treating and recovering from concussions, which has merit. They're doing good work, but they're ignoring those subconcussive hits. And that's concerning because that seems to be why these things are occurring. A good analogy is erosion. The Grand Canyon wasn't created by a lightning strike. It was just the wear from the river over and over again. Those are those subconcussive hits over and over again in practice, in the off season, in games. That's why I believe we're seeing players who are struggling.
Chris, I want to thank you very much. This has been instructive, and I think it's going to be instructive to the millions of people that listen to me worldwide. And I thank you for coming and talking to us. You're welcome here anytime.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and happy holidays.
Chris Borland with us, and again, 24 years old, 1 year in the NFL, had a great year, and he retired over the issues and concerns he had about his health playing the game. We continue with more of You and Sports Byline.